in finishing up Perek Yud Tes, and we had commented or promised we skipped the Ramban from a couple of days ago. We will start with there and see where we go. So in Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Hey, so we have the request from the Anashim, from the people, Shabo Elech HaLayla, come over the course of that night, Hutzim Eleinu V'Nedo Osam, take those people out. Again, these are the guests that Lot has, the angels, so please find them, and we want to get to know them. And Rashi says, as we would expect, the Mishkav Zachar, in the biblical sense of the word, we want to sodomize them. So the Ramban picks up from there. It says, what was their motivation? What's wrong with these people? That some guest comes into the area and right away we're going to do these kinds of activities to them. So the Ramban uses the terminology of Vehim Hayu Moasei Hatzdaka. They were those that hated or found degraded the idea of tzedakah. So Lot, who came in and he had a lot of money, he had a lot of wealth, so he was accepted in pretty easily. But anybody that would require any amount of giving and any amount of tzedakah, so that is something that was unacceptable to the people of Sodom, with the fear being that if we give you money, so then everybody's going to want, and everybody's going to make demands of us, and that's just never going to work. So that's going to be our rule. And we're never going to give money to any of those that request. So that was, and one can pick up from here and say, so that's what Hashem found despicable. That's what Hashem found that he had to destroy, and that's what led to the destruction of stone. That seems to be the opinion that the Ramban is going. So, and that's considered worse than any of the other things that other nations had done. So there is a question that the Chidushei Halev asks. And Chidush Halev is Rav Henoch Leibowitz. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chafetz Chaim, passed away a few years ago. So there are svarim that are put together by his Talmidim, from his Vadim, from the Musashvism that he gave over. And he raises the question here. Let me turn to the right page. There it is. That he quotes from this Ramban that they were Mu'asei Tzedakah, and they wouldn't give to any of the aniyim of their cities. And then he adds in, even though that is the teva of people, right? Why was that the thing that they did? Why is it that members of the Sodom society, when they saw people that were in need, they were able to have the wherewithal, the fortitude to say, well, no, sorry, that we're just not going to give you anything. So what he explains is, so the Ramban statement is Shlorotzu Shiapo Lisham Aniim Mikom Acherim. That they knew that if we help this person out, then who knows who else is going to come. So the Ramban is implying that even though they might have had the desire to help out that Ani that was right in front of them, they realized that that desire is ultimately not going to help us in the long run, and therefore we are going to have to suppress that desire because of what we assume to be the greater, morality, I don't know if they assume that they're being moral, but what we assume to be the greater good, that we have to maintain our purity, maintain our wealth, and if we start giving money to this guy, we're going to have to start giving money to all these other types of people as well. It's a slippery slope, that's correct.
But they didn't even like people coming into the town to sell their goods. I remember there's a story about a guy comes in with his peas, and everybody takes 3 peas, but if you take 3 peas, that's not stealing, but if you take 4, that's stealing.
Those people, the Mabul, you're saying?
Yeah, they stole just a little bit, so they wouldn't be guilty.
That is right. The idea of
the Mabul, I thought it was.
The idea of Gzela Pachas Mishavah proof is talked about by the Mabul. This specific thing I'm not familiar with. Uh-huh. But that is talked about with regards to the Mabul. But, So the Chidush Halev says that Ramban works very well for poor people that came from other cities, but we should be able to restrict it to this city. Maybe we'll have a wealth. If you have a desire to give out some tzedakah, there presumably were some poor people in Sodom, so why can't you help them? And we'll just we'll build a fence and build a wall around the city, make sure that immigrants can come in, and I'm sure that whatever social welfare we have in our city will be able to maintain only for our city, if that was the case. So the Chidush Halev gives his own pshat, and it says that they were concerned that if they would begin to help out the aniyim of their city, not that we would run out of money because all these other people would come and ask us for money, but that they would turn into Bali Rachamim. That it was not a practical issue, but rather it was a midos issue. That once we start giving that mida some amount of credence, we're now going to then observe and use that mida in many other types of places as well. To the point that they resolved to akru es midas harachmanus milibam legamri. That they attempted to totally uproot the characteristic of being merciful from their hearts in its entirety. That was their goal. Not a practical issue, but a midos issue. And then he goes on and gives a very interesting interpretation of the Gemara, of a Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara in Megillah discusses with Vashti, the first parak of the Megillah Esther. Vashti has her own party. What does the pasuk say? Gam Vashti emalka asnam mishnei nashim epeis hamalchus. That Vashti goes and makes her own party, makes four women mishnei nashim beis hamalchus in the palace. What do you mean in the palace? It sounds like in the palace of Ahasuerus. I mean, there was one palace. She didn't have her own palace. So she didn't have a separate women's party in the... what's that place on Bala Avenue? The women's... that building where all the...
Women's League?
The Women's League. Right, so they didn't have... They didn't go to the Women's League building in order to have a party. She decided to have it in the palace itself. So the Gemara asks... Well, why? Well, if you want to have a woman's party, go someplace else. So Amar Rava, no. Shneim ledover aver nischabnu. That both sides, both Ahasuerus as well as Vashti, they both had in mind that we're going to do an avera. That the idea was that this will ultimately lead to intermingling and will lead to pritzas. So the Gemara asks about Tamein Hamalka Vashti. So then a couple of lines later, it skips a little bit and tells the story that Ahasuerus invites Vashti to come, and Vashti refuses to come. Vashti doesn't want to come. So why doesn't Vashti want to come? So what is the what does the Gemara answer to that question? Anybody remember? What? That she got saras. That she got saras. That's what the Gemara answers. So the Rav Henoch Leibowitz asks a question on that. Wait a second. What did Ahasuerus want from her? Right. What did he want from her? So he wanted her. Right, the Gemara actually itself says this, that he wanted her to appear totally naked. That's what Ahasuerus wanted. So says the says Rav Henoch, why wasn't that the reason she didn't want it? Why does the Gemara have to come on to, oh, she must have gotten saras? Why didn't the Gemara just say, well, she wanted to, Ahasuerus wanted her to do something that she didn't want to do. She wanted her to appear totally naked. She didn't want to, so therefore that's the reason she said no. So he explains, if you look carefully at the Gemara's question, the Gemara acknowledges that question and then moves on. But Tamein Hamalka Vashti, that Vashti refused to come, Michtei, Pritzusahave. Why? So why? Let's take a look. Pritzusahave. She already was a Prutza. She already was a parrot. She already was somebody that had debased morals. So Damar Marsh, they lived over Erevin Eschavna. As we said 20 lines earlier, both Ahasuerus and Vashti had in mind to do something, to do Averus. So my time alone. So why didn't she come? So Ravasi explains, because of the Tsaras issue. So why not the... So why didn't it just ignite? Well, she didn't want to go because that was worse than she... I mean, she had in mind, oh, we're going to have do a moral activity, we're going to have a party, and men and women will go to separate rooms and they'll do whatever they do there. Right? But Ahasuerus, she wants me to appear in front of the entire Persian kingdom in my birthday suit? Well, I'm not interested in doing that. So that sounds like a pretty reasonable answer. Why wouldn't that be the answer, right? Why did Vashti come in front if she is a pirate? Well, she's a pirate to one level, but to do what Ahasuerus wanted, that's way beyond. So Rav Henoch says, because there aren't levels when it comes to bad midos. When a person has a bad mida, it goes all the way. So with regards to stone, their mida was, we're going to be achzorim. Achzorim means we're going to be cruel. So if you're going to be cruel, we're going to be cruel the entire way. So too, when it comes to the immoral activity of Vashti and Ahasuerus, we're going to be prutzim. You are prutzim all the way. It's not a possible answer that, oh, we're going to draw the line halfway through. It's you either are or you aren't. And once she is, so she was a prutz, so the Gemara had to figure out a different reason why she possibly wouldn't want to appear in front of everybody. And what is the reason that the Gemara came out to? Oh, it must have been that she had some kind of skim malady that would keep her from going. It can't be because she was afraid of that immoral activity. He goes on to quote from Right, from this,
so she really wasn't allowed then to bring up this business of, I'm not going to be in my birthday suit before the whole...
I don't know, allowed. I mean, it's not conceivable.
It wasn't conceivable.
I mean, the Gemara doesn't conceive that as a possible answer, because why would she be willing to do X and not Y?
Yeah.
So, right, so he quotes here from the Mishnah Berurah, Siman Aleph Sifkat and Hey, She'in lihishtamish v'midas ha'azos afilu l'shem shemayim, k'dei shelo yavo lihishtamish v'zeh gavim makum shelo l'shem shemayim. That a person shouldn't involve himself in the midah of stubbornness, or the midah of even l'shem shemayim, so that a person won't use even shelo l'shem shemayim. Once a person enters into those areas of midos, we're going to demonstrate a bad midah, but only to a certain point. So he says that doesn't work. Doesn't work. You have to cease it totally. And he says that even there are those. He quotes from the Orchos Tzadikim that there's an aspect of being stubborn that perhaps is mishubachas, that perhaps is praiseworthy. He says, no, that's not real stubbornness. That's like a alter ego of stubbornness that might be usable, but being really stubborn, so that's totally inappropriate. So
they're not remediable.
Yeah, sorry. Bad midas are bad midas, right? And they have to be fixed. I mean, the mida has to be fixed. Not to say, well, I'm going to apply it here, I'm not going to apply it there. So it's an interesting concept. I'm not sure that I totally buy into it. I mean, you have to go through some other sources. But as a place to start a discussion of that, so that Chiddush HaLev is certainly an interesting source. By the way, that explains a famous Gemara appears several times in an area of Halakha called Midas Stone. Has anybody ever have you confronted that at all? What is Midas Stone? What does it mean to be a characteristic of stone? So that's when a person is going to gain and the other person is not going to lose. So the example is I remember coming across Midas Stone for the first time when I learned Bava Basra my freshman year in high school. And the on Daf Yud Beis in Maseches Bava Basra, so it discusses Midas Stone in the following scenario. Now, let's say a father passes away and he leaves behind he has three sons, and so the oldest son is going to get two amounts, and the other two are going to get one amount each. So how does that work? You divide the father's property into four parts, and the oldest son gets two, and the other two get one each. So Gemara says the oldest son should have his two pieces of property right next to each other. Why? Because the Gemara says, but for the other brother to demand, I want that one. If there's A, B, C, and D, and one brother says I want B, and the other one says I want C, so to force brother A, who's the oldest, to have two fields that are distant from one another, that's Midas Stone, because brother B and brother C are not gaining anything by having those particular. The assumption of the Gemara is that they're not gaining anything by having that particular field. So, but brother A would gain something by having his two fields together. So therefore, he could demand that I want to have my two fields together. And the Gemara says, "Kofen al Midas Stone." We would force the other brother to give in and not have demonstrate this idea called Midas Stone. That's an idea called Zeneh Nevezelo Chaser, that one gains and the other one doesn't lose. For the one that's not losing to anyway step up and say, no, I don't want it that way. So we call that Midas Stone, and to force him out of that, Basin can force him out of it. Another example, the Gemara says, if you want to divide the father's property up, and one of the brothers already has a property next to the father. He has a big field, and the brother has a field next to it. So he could say, oh, I want my portion to be the portion of dad's field that was right next to mine. So for the other brothers to come and protest that would be an example of Midas Stone. So why is it particularly Midas Stone? So I thought, based on this idea of the Chiddushei Halev, because that is a total disregard of me. I mean, that is you're not even gaining anything, and still you are demonstrating a bad Midah. That means that you are... Yeah, I don't want to be a Rachman at all, was concerned about what it might lead to down the road. Oh, I don't want to be played for a... in Michael Oren's book, he talks about that when he became ambassador, he had a dinner with Hillary Clinton, was at that time Secretary of State. So she made a dinner for... to honor him and the Israeli in the State Department. So he went for dinner there, and he sat with her, and he taught her the word friar. In Israel, what does it mean to be a friar? So a friar means as somebody who gets played. Right? That's what it means to be a friar. So he taught that word to Hillary Clinton. She made some comment of, I got to remember that term. I don't, right? So I was actually reading recently that... that there was some don't remember what the issue was now, but Obama made a reference to, like, why don't you just do this for Israel? And Obama made some kind of reference. It was, I don't want to be called a friar. I mean, the word had clearly gotten around the administration, but in that situation, it seemed more of a midas stump. I mean, a friar means I don't want to get played, and I don't want to lose when, you know, etc. But to say, be an oxer, to be cruel and say, I'm not going to give anything because I don't want to be called a friar. So that seems to be an example of midas sedom. Okay, so then we continue on, and on this pasuk as well, there is an interesting little article here in the Me'in Beis HaShoeva. Me'in Beis HaShoeva is the thoughts of Rav Shimon Schwab, who was the Rav in Frankfurt. You know, there's Frankfurt al Main, Frankfurt on the Main River. There's also Frankfurt al Hudson. So Franklin Al Hudson is in Washington Heights, right? So the Breuerschel Washington Heights, Rav Schwab for many years was the Rav there. I think I mentioned him. My freshman year in high school, he passed away. I remember the entire MTA walked the 6 blocks across the town in order to go to his Levaya, which was obviously well attended. So he talks about this, really the pasuk before, that before these men, I mean referring to the angels, before they went to sleep, so all of the people all showed up outside of Lot's house. So Schwab says, why? Like, what happened? Why are all these people coming? So I understand we want to be mean to guests. We don't want to give them any tzedakah. We're not going to help them out. We're not going to put them on the wall for a row. But what do you all got to go and beat them up as soon as they come? What were they seeking when they came? And Schwab's suggestion is that when people are in a total degree, that the further to the side of Tuma you go, the more one seeks to, more when a aspect of tahara comes into the picture, so you attempt to stick to it, not necessarily to because I want to become tahor, but that they attract one another. It bothers the other side more. They come into greater conflict. Perhaps that is a suggestion. In the very beginning of kinos and of the day of Tisha B'Av, so the Kina makes the comment, Schi Umos, I forget, Ata Imadli or something, that they have made me, Hashem, you turn to Hashem, that they have turned me into Schi Umos, meaning degrading and garbage, etc., that the non-Jews have made us this way. So Rav Soloveitchik commented on that, well, they have to do something with us. Either they're going to raise us up and say how wonderful the Jews are, or they're going to say that they're disgusting, bad, terrible, etc. But they can't ignore us. Right? That's not possible. There's no society in the history that Jews have been participated in that didn't have some type of discussion about how to deal with the Jews as an independent entity. So when there is an aspect of Kedusha, a degraded society will congregate around that Kedusha.
But not to improve themselves.
No. So not necessarily, right, so sometimes perhaps to improve themselves and sometimes not. So in this case, right, it seems not. So okay. he points to a pasuk in in the first time around when we come in contact with Sodom, in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel. So when Avram and Lot are divvying up where they're going to go, so they send, so Lot goes over there, and the Chumash makes a comment, V'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chata'im l'Hashem ma'od, that the people of Sodom were evil and sinners towards Hashem ma'od. So what were they exactly sinning? What does it mean, the ra'im v'chata'im? So he quotes from Rav Hirsch, also Rav of that institution, a previous Rav of that institution, while it was still Frankfurt on Main. So he quotes from Rav Hirsch that, well, what do you mean they were sinners, but they had laws. I mean, in Sodom, they had laws, if not for the idea that we're afraid that if we don't protect someone else, then we're going to get devoured ourselves. So they actually did have some type of social order. So he says that's what the pasuk means. V'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chata'im, and then there's an esnachta. What is an esnachta? That is a pause in the pasuk. So v'anshei Sodom ra'im. So v'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chata'im l'Hashem ma'od. That's how you read the pasuk. So the people of Sodom were evil and bad, but not necessarily ma'od, because they had some sort of social institution. Where were they really bad? Where is the ma'od listed? the moed is listed amongst the Hashem. I mean, they had a system set up amongst them that had some sinful impacts around it, but towards Hashem, with regards to morality, with regards to Kedusha, with regards to sanctity, so that they were totally against. That we're at the total opposite extreme of, and that's why when the angels showed up, they had to stick with them. So then he goes on and says, that's why Lot offered them his daughters. Because presumably his daughters had some amount of Kedusha, so perhaps that would appease them. That would, we'd be able to see some sanctity. But they didn't want the daughters, they wanted the Malachim. Malachim are a higher degree of sanctity. So therefore they were, so to speak, attracted to that Kedusha, and that's what brought them all out that night to be outside of Lot's house. He then goes on to make one more fascinating suggestion. And also how to put this into our everyday life is you got to think about it a little bit. But he quotes from the very last Mishnah, Maseches Brachos. So it quotes the pasuk in Tehillim, "Eis la'asos Hashem hifiru Torah secha." That there are times to do the work of Hashem when the Torah is being denied, the Torah is being uprooted. So what is that talking about? So that pasuk is often is quoted in a halakhic context several times over the course of Shas. That sometimes we do things that seem to be keneged halakha in order to maintain the Mesorah. So what is the classic example of doing an Eis la'asos Hashem that's mentioned in the Torah itself? Might have even been Maseches Sota? No, not Maseches Sota. The idea of not translating the Torah, but of writing down the Torah Shebal Peh. The Torah Shebal Peh was always oral. How can you put it into writing? That seems to be inappropriate. Well, what's if you didn't put it into writing, so the Mesorah wasn't going to maintain. So Eis la'asos Hashem hefiru sarasecha. That there are times that we have to do Hashem in order and deny the Torah. So and deny what seems to be explicit in the Torah itself. So the Perish HaMishnayis, the Rambam's commentary on those Mishnayis, the very last comment that the Rambam makes in Maseches Brachos about those Mishnayis, says, well, what exactly does the words mean? That there are times that Hashem makes things to deny the Torah. What does he mean by that? So sometimes when there is a person or when there is a society that is doing pretty bad, that is up for punishment, that they're up to have Hashem is getting ready to punish them, Hashem will give them one more nisayon and say, okay, let's see how they do here. If they're able to pass this, so then I see everything is okay. And if they're not able to pass, I see everything is not okay. I don't think he doesn't mention this explicitly, but like Nineveh, right? The Nineveh deserved to be destroyed, and he gave them one more test. You know, Yonah's going to come up. Are they going to beat Yonah up? Or are they going to listen to Yonah? They listen to Yonah, so everything turned out okay. That might be an example. But Hashem gives sometimes one more, and that's like all or nothing. Are you in or are you not in? So the Rambam goes on and says, so one always has to be nervous. Every time a person gets a test, one has to think, this isn't just the test building up to that, maybe this is the test that I better pass, otherwise everything's going to come to, everything's going to fall apart and it's going to be a problem. So that's what the Rambam suggests.
You don't care at all.
Unless you don't care at all, so then it's all over. Right. So he said, well, worse than that. So he says, this is what happened with Sodom. Those angels come. Why are the angels hanging out there all night? Right? Why don't the angels just come in, you take Lot, you take his family, you take his kids, right? Get out of there! Right? What are they doing there the entire night? So suggests Rav Schwab, no, this was the final test. Right? Sodom deserved to be destroyed. Right? And in fact, you know, now that I think about it, this maybe explains some things in the previous parak as well. Let's just hold on a second. Sodom deserved to be destroyed.
Okay.
Right? He sends these people in. What are these people? These people are malachim. These people are angels. Right? Hashem says, Hashem is setting up. This is the final test. Are these, let's see. I'm sending in angels. Will they be able to treat them well? If Sodom is able to treat them well, so then maybe everything will be okay. If they're not able to treat them well, so then it's all going to be over. And that was the test of the final night. And now if we think back to the previous pasuk, it makes a little bit more sense, the whole issue with Hashem coming, with Avram, and Avram arguing back, and Hashem saying, I don't know, we're going to see. If there's nothing wrong, Hashem is everywhere. Hashem knows what's going on in Sodom. What does it mean Hashem says, I'm going to go and check it out? He didn't know? He can't see from the the upper deck, he needs to come and buy a box seat. That doesn't make any sense. So Hashem knows what's wrong. Hashem knows that Sodom is going to be destroyed. He shows up by Avram. Avram negotiates on their behalf. Can we work this out? Right? And we concluded, according to the Ramban, that Hashem says, okay, I accept your arguments. I'm going to go check it out. What do you mean you're going to go check it out? You haven't been checking it out for the last several decades? What are you checking out now? Right? So perhaps the answer is, this is nice. This is the final test. Now it's time to see. Okay, I hear what you're saying, Avram. We're going to give him one more shot. You know, I'm going to send in a couple of angels and see, are those angels going to be, are they going to be able to at least treat them well? And the fact that they weren't able to treat them well, by the end of the night we see, all right, this ain't going to work. And therefore, we're going to take him out. So perhaps that's, the Rashab doesn't say that, that's my own Ha'ara, but perhaps the Rashab's Ha'ara based on the Rambam, so maybe that gives us a little bit of light on the previous Parak negotiations as well. All right? We'll stop here.